Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the UU Bible Study. It is such a joy to have you with us today as we explore the Psalm and Hebrew text for Epiphany Week 3. My name is the Reverend Samuel Felderman, and I am joined, as always, by my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Michelle Townsend Grove. We are so excited to have you with us today as we explore Zephaniah chapter 3, verses 14 through 20 as our commentary text. And our psalm today is Psalm chapter 17, verses 6 through 9, as well as verses 13 and 15. It's a wonderful day to be with you. Thank you for joining us today on the UU Bible Study podcast. At this time, friends, Michelle is going to open our time by reading to us Psalm chapter 17, verses 6 through 9, verse 13, and verse 15, and she will be reading from the New International Version. And as always, we will be hearing this first from one translation and then from Dr. Gaffney's translation. And then we'll have a time of quiet to sit with these beautiful words that we have been given today. Michelle, how are you? Thank you for being here and thank you for leading us in our psalm this morning.
Oh, thanks, Samuel. It's so good to be with you again. This is so much fun to read through these, to kind of let them sink into our heart, mind, and body, and to reflect on these words. One of my favorite things is this comparison that we do, where we read it from one translation, and then we hear right beside it the amazing, profound translation from Reverend Dr. Wilda C. Gaffney. So so good to be with you. And everybody who is listening, thank you for being a part of this journey with us. So hear these words from Psalm 17, 6 to 9, and then 13 and 15. I call on you, O God, for you will answer me. Give ear to me and hear my prayer. Show the wonder of your great love. You who save by your right hand those who take refuge in you from their foes. Keep me as the apple of your eye. Hide me in the shadow of your wings from the wicked who assail me, from my mortal enemies who surround me. Rise up, O Lord, confront them, bring them down. Rescue me from the wicked by your sword. And I, in righteousness, I will see your face when I awake. I will be satisfied with seeing your likeness. And now Samuel will read from Dr. Gaffney's translation. Samuel?
Friends, a reading from Psalm 17. I call upon you, for you will answer me, God. Extend your ear to me and hear my words. Make your wondrous, faithful love known, Savior of those who seek refuge at your right hand, from those who raise themselves up against us. Keep me as the apple of your eye and hide me in the shadow of your wings, from the wicked who despoil me, my mortal enemies who surround me. Rise up, O holy protector, confront them and overthrow them. Deliver my soul from the sword of the wicked. As for me, in righteousness shall I behold your face, and I shall be satisfied when I wake, having seen your likeness. Friends, we'll now take a moment for reflective meditation, and we invite you to sit with these words and reflect on what they might mean for you today.
And now, my friends, I invite you to continue with me, being warmed by the psalm, both from the NIV and from Dr. Gaffney's translation. We will now read the text in which we will talk about today. Hear these words from the prophet Zephaniah, chapter 3, verses 14 to 20. Sing aloud, daughter of Zion. Shout, all ye Israel. Rejoice, daughter, and exult with all your heart, daughter of Jerusalem. The judge of all flesh has taken away the judgments against you and has turned away your enemies, daughter. The sovereign of Israel, creator of the heavens and earth, is in your midst, daughter. No longer shall you fear evil. On that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, fear not, Zion, do not let your hands grow weak, daughter. The ageless one, your God, is in your midst, daughter. A warrior who will deliver salvation, who will rejoice over you with gladness, daughter. God will renew you in love, daughter. God will exalt over you, daughter, with loud singing. Those who are grieved on account of the festivals, I will remove from you, daughter. So, daughter, that you will not bear their reproach. I will deal with all your oppressors, daughter, at that time. And I will save the lame and gather the outcast. And I will change their shame into praise and renown in all the earth. At that time, I will bring you all home. At that time, when I gather all of you, for I will make you all renowned and praised among all the peoples of the earth. When I restore your fortunes before all of your eyes, says the God who is salvation. This is a powerful reading. Samuel, what are you thinking about? What are you feeling as you hear these amazing words from Dr. Gaffney's translation?
Well, Michelle, as always, I have so many things that rose to the top of thoughts and feelings as we were reading through this. The first thing that I'll mention is you are so right. It's absolutely beautiful. The prophetic language that we have been able to read, not just from Zephaniah today, but really through the whole of Epiphany, has highlighted just really how beautiful and how poetic the prophetic literature of the Hebrew Bible really is. I don't think that the prophets get near as much attention as they should, perhaps. And so I'm excited that we're able to spend some time with them and sort of uncover this genre of biblical text that is often overlooked. So I'm glad for that. I wanted to highlight, sort of thinking about our text today, but the whole book itself, I wanted to take a minute and just talk about the prophet Zephaniah, specifically that the prophet Zephaniah, his book, is known as one of the minor prophets. And we've talked about this before. Minor does not mean less than. This is sort of a crash course in intro to Bible stuff here, friends, that minor does not mean less than, it means shorter. The book of Zephaniah is only 3 chapters long. And in the Bible that I use for study, it's 5 pages. You can sit down and read it in about 10 minutes if you wanted to. And I lift this up because while I am so proud of the work that we are doing on this podcast, looking at all of the ways that these texts interact with our personal lives and invite us into a deeper conversations with ourselves and with our spiritual lives. One of the goals of this podcast that we stated at the beginning is that we also want our listeners to be able to feel confident in using the Bible and interacting with the Bible when it comes to larger social, cultural, and even political conversations, right? This is not just a spiritual exercise, although that is incredibly important. This is also an exercise in us being able to engage with our culture more effectively. And how we do that is by actually reading the Bible itself and becoming more aware of what it says. And so, friends, I invite you, obviously, we want you to sit with the texts that we have read today, but I also hope that our listeners can take seriously that call that we have, I think, in this episode today, but in those other episodes that we sort of cross-reference and highlight other texts. Friends, this is an invitation to help you not only expand in a spiritual sense, but it's also, I hope, expanding your toolbox in how to be able to function in the cultural context that we find ourselves. So that's the first thing that I really wanted to highlight. It's 5 pages, friends. Please sit down and just read it. You will be better off for having read the book of Zephaniah.
I love it. I love it. That is a foundational core value of UU Bible study. How is it that we gain knowledge and voice so that we can put both word and understanding behind a different perspective than, say, what either the dominant culture is saying the Bible says, or using the Bible for harm? And how do we combat that? They're using it for excluding people, and how do we combat that? And so anywhere, we read a section, more than likely it might be good to read a little bit of the margins beyond that. Like in this, like what Samuel said, read the book of Zephaniah. I'll tell you the danger though, and this is a fun danger, but just be aware of it. And I hit it this week. And that is, once you broaden those margins, you're going to go down rabbit holes that are going to be really hard to get out of. Stop laughing, Samuel. I know you're laughing.
We, Michelle and I, unintentionally became biblical scholars because of what she's talking about. We started reading the margins, and the next thing you know, she has a doctorate.
Yes. And you have, and you are ordained.
Yeah.
You see, it all happens. And so,
It's a slippery slope, friends. Just know
and
that.
seeing that's the trek you all are going to take who are with us today. I am just saying that as you find yourself going down a rabbit hole, just know that there's gifts down there. Just keep a light so that you know how to get out. So, for example, so in reading Zephaniah, and looking at this week, one of the things that I was reminded of is the fact that Zephaniah was a prophet of that southern kingdom, Judah, right? The larger one that had Jerusalem as its center. So it was always a bit stronger than the northern kingdom. And he was a prophet in the 7th century. So, kind of that 650 to 600 BCE-ish kind of time. And he was a prophet during the time of Josiah, who is a famous northern kingdom king who served from 640 to 609 BCE. And that dating has actually been substantiated by scholars and archaeologists because it's found not only in Hebrew and Jewish scripts and texts, it's also found outside of that. So there's ways that they can kind of substantiate it to say, yes, that's true, because we see it in more than one place through more than one culture. And so here's Josiah, who is the king. And Josiah is the king who is famously known for bringing back the law and bringing back Passover to the people. And because of that, because of his commitment to that, God has favor for him and for Judah. And Zephaniah is a prophet to this court. One of the things to know is that the other piece that, and this is another rabbit hole, and it's a rabbit hole I encourage you to go down because it's fascinating, is that there is a prophetess who inspires Josiah by the name of Huldah. So if you want to read the story of Josiah, go to 2 Kings chapter 22 and 23, and you can read the story of how this book of law was found, how Josiah wept when it was read to him, and how he then acted to bring that law back to his people and say, "My friends, we have work to do to recovenant with God." And just know too that the other rabbit hole I'm going down, and so I'm naming my rabbit holes so that if you follow down them, you're like, okay, I'm in good company or not, depending, right? And that is the fact that this cycle throughout the Hebrew scriptures is seen here. The people honor God, but then they get distracted by other gods. And what Josiah is doing is bringing them back to this one God. One of the things to know is that this is not a monotheistic culture. This is henotheistic, which means they worship one God, but they do not deny that the other gods exist. That's very different than if you look at Christianity today, right? So, and I would even dare say Judaism, even though that's not my family, so I hate to kind of speak for Judaism at that point, and yet at the same time, you see monotheism in Judaism and Christianity today, whereas at this point, it's henotheism, which is the fact that we're worshiping this one God, but there's all these other gods that they still believe exist. They just don't see them as important, or they should not worship them at all. And the people keep getting distracted. They keep going, they keep kind of shifting gods. So that is a part of this culture. And prophets like Huldah, like Zephaniah, like Jeremiah are pulling people back to this one God. And Zephaniah is doing so by looking at the feminine. This feminine understanding of the community is rich and vibrant and often overlooked because monotheism also upholds patriarchy. So whenever patriarchy is upheld, anywhere that we can kind of put the feminine language into the shadows, we will. And that's, Samuel, that's one of the reasons that I am loving Dr. Gaffney's work. Because Dr. Gaffney, at least to me, what I am hearing is Dr. Gaffney saying, oh, no. There's a lot of this amazing language, and we're going to pay attention to it, and we're going to bring it back. And in that, those of us, me included, who identify as women can go, I can see myself in the story. And isn't that a powerful thing? So, what else for you? What else is happening?
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for giving that so much beautiful context to this story. And friends, do go read the story of Josiah in 2 Kings. It's a 2 Kings is a as we say about most stories in the Bible, most books of the Bible, it is a complicated story, and there's a lot going on there. But chapters 22 and 23 will give you that highlighted story. Michelle, I'm so grateful for you bringing up the importance of and the power of being seen in the text. Because we've been talking about this, for this project, we chose Dr. Gaffney's Year of the Woman because it highlights the role and stories of women in the biblical text, both human women and the divine feminine, the acts of God, the images, the feminine images of God that have been sort of washed over and overlooked by patriarchy, because it's hard to sort of have this warring god standing next to this nurturing mother. And so culture sort of made a decision to go one direction for reasons of power and place. And so I'm excited to be able to lift where it's such a blessing to be able to lift up the necessity of that visibility. With that in mind, I have another issue around visibility I'd like us to briefly talk about today. As we've gone through the prophetic readings in the time of Epiphany, as we've gone through these readings, there's been a phrase that's been repeated a lot. If you go back and actually look at some of the Christmas carols that you were singing earlier in the year, friends, you will also see it there. And this is this idea of restoration being connected to bodily health. And in our reading today, we saw in verse 19, where it says, "I will deal with all of your oppressors, daughter, at that time. I will save the lame and gather the outcast." And we've seen this in a lot of our readings, that when we're talking about restoration, we're talking about the lame being able to walk and the blind being able to see and the deaf being able to hear. And on the one hand, that's a really beautiful vision and talks about wholeness in a way that is just not found in the human family at this particular time. However, these calls for restoration can also be read in a really damaging way that implies that those who have physical or mental disabilities are less than people who are seen as not disabled, who are seen as able-bodied. And if taken too far, these calls to restoration can actually be seen and be read as calls to sort of a homogeny of humankind, and actually sort of a diminishing of disability, and not only a diminishing of disability, but a diminishing of diversity, right? What do we mean when we say that? What does an because what we're left with this question that we're left with is, what does a perfect body look like? Is a perfect body a body that can walk? Is a perfect body a body that's not overweight? Is a perfect body, because we've seen this in the past, this was a thing that, right, let's name these things. Is a perfect body a body that's male? Is a perfect body a body that's white? We can go on and see the ways in which this language around the perfect body, full restoration, actually being a call to take away and see people with disabilities as sort of the problem. They're the evidence that things aren't right yet. And that is a really, really painful and damaging thing that I, until very recently, was very blind to. And I'm so grateful that a new voice in my sort of theological concepts has been brought up by this, because it's just not something I had really noted before. And I'm so glad that I have this new sort of lens through which I can look. And I really wanted to highlight for people today a particular theologian. Her name is Nancy Island. Nancy is the author of sort of the flagship work on the theology of disability. And she wrote a book entitled The Disabled God, Toward a Liberatory Theology of Disability. And she sets out to underscore the ways in which Christianity, particularly Christianity, but the biblical narrative has been used as a weapon against people with disabilities and has been used as a weapon to make them less than and not welcome. And I would encourage us as we continue to read these texts of liberation, these texts of restoration, to always be asking this question of who's being left out? And are these calls, these words that we're using harming someone in a way that we may not be aware of? And I'm so grateful to Nancy Eisland for her work and opening my eyes to that. But I hope that we can continue to lift up narratives and theologians who have been marginalized because she is, you know, Nancy is not a straight white man. She is a woman with a severe physical disabilities that has left her sort of sidelined because she's the sort of the epitome of what the restoration doesn't look like for some people. So I wanted to highlight that, and I appreciate everyone listening to me as we go, as I sort of went down that rabbit hole, because that's where I've been. But I hope that we have the courage to look at these things honestly and ask ourselves, what are we doing to bring wholeness to the world? And what are we doing to acknowledge the full humanity of those around us?
Oh, this is excellent. And it plays into, you know, something that we looked at last week. Another one of my goals, you know, with this UU Bible Study podcast is that we look at the voices of those academics, those scholars, those theologians who don't always pop up immediately when we do a search. However we're doing a search, whether it's in a, you know, seminary library, whether it's in our public library, whether it's online, whatever it might be, but to really dig deep. Because most of the time, those who pop up immediately are those who are tenured, white male, cisgendered, you know, middle age, you know, those kinds of things. Those identities are the ones that just tend to get the easiest attention. And yet, there are so many amazing, diverse voices and academics that are doing phenomenal work. You just named Dr. Eisland, who is one of those. And I'm sorry to say that, you know, Dr. Eisland died in 2009. And so, you know, that is a loss. So to have whatever we can from Dr. Eisland's wisdom is just something to hold on to and to really kind of, you know, almost integrate into our understanding and being. And there are others as well. Dr. Gaffney, to me, is one of those that, you know, I would not have found Dr. Gaffney's work on first search. And yet, look how brilliant it is. So one of the things I'm hoping we can continue to do is raise these voices and just say, hey, check out this theologian, check out this scholar, because they're doing phenomenal work. And we're going to be pleasantly surprised, even though we shouldn't be surprised. We need to shift our culture so we're not surprised that there are so many diverse voices in this academic and theological field. So, my friends, there is so much more about Zephaniah that we could talk about, so much more. And we're trying to pick up a couple of themes, look at it both broadly, a little bit specific, and hope that it whets your whistle enough so that you start traveling down your own rabbit holes. Thank you for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you next week when we look at Epiphany 4.